I mean, I suppose that this new oral history project is going to, the idea is to provide a snapshot of what Gibraltar is now. It's more present, isn't it? And do you think?
Well, there is this concern about a Gibraltarian identity. What is a Gibraltarian? What makes a Gibraltarian identity? I have never had any problems, but this is something that people feel an inadequacy to. They can't say what they are. I know what I am, and I've always known what I am, and I'm a British subject, a child of the Empire, if you like, who was born in Gibraltar, have a Gibraltarian culture and Jewish background. You know, that's me. I don't need to define it any further. But people in Gibraltar are trying to define a nationalist idea, which is, at the end of it, is going to be quite false, because things are not that simple. You can describe the influences and the origin, but within that there is variety, and you have a particular spread of views and ideas and characters, and nationalism, I think, is a very false god.
Yeah, I think it just sounds so interesting, because there is such a variety of cultures, and you know, as you say, it can't really be summed up, you know, under one word. But I would have thought that the Second World War, Gibraltar must have definitely changed. That must have been a turning point.
Because people became anglicised. But on the other hand, you had a lot of men in Gibraltar who continued the trend of marrying Spanish girls from across the border, because there weren't any Gibraltarians around. And when the problem started with Spain, the most vehemently anti-Spanish were the Spanish women in Gibraltar, because they were working class, because they had been oppressed by Franco. I mean, the last thing they wanted was to have the Spanish police in Gibraltar.
And they wanted, presumably, to have a British passport too.
Oh, yes.
And do you think as well, I mean, and this is a very obvious question, but not only that, but I mean, obviously everything, whole of Europe changed after the Second World War, but particularly, I've been particularly interested, as I mentioned before, about the stories of the women who hadn't really been out of Gibraltar. I mean, do you think the sort of culture of family and changed?
Oh, of course. They became, to a certain extent, they had an influx of English culture which they had never had before. Remind me to give you a book I published by a man called Rodriguez, and you'll find it interesting, because he had a very good memory, and he remembered, he described his trip from Gibraltar to England, and he also described when he was living in La Linea and they came to Gibraltar, for the first time he had running water and a bath when he came to England, because people in Gibraltar didn't have running water in those days, mostly.
I mean, even after the war?
Even after the war, yeah.
Yes, that's somebody.
That's the other thing you have to remind me of.
Okay, remember the book. Okay, let's just go back to your personal experience again, because we keep sort of moving in and out. Paul Baker, well, I mentioned Paul Baker because he, as you know, wrote an article for the Chronicle about his experience of the explosion in the dockyard. Yeah. And then I also asked him, and I wondered if you remembered that.
No, I was in England at the time. When I heard about it, it was a Saturday. And I was very worried because my grandmother was very ill. And I thought it might have disturbed her. But I was in England, I wasn't there.
Right, okay. Let me just see. So we've talked a little bit about Northern Ireland. Could we talk... We talked about the mini subs. Yeah, the Bedenham, that was it, the Bedenham explosion. So, just going back to yourself, so when you went to school, went with the Christian Brothers, And then what was the next bit? What happened next?
I came to England. As I said, I was interested in... I got this bursary to go to Jews College, and I did for 2 years, until I gave up, and I left without a degree at the time.
And where? What was that? Where was it?
That was in Houston, and it was a college for rabbinic students. So we did a degree in Semitic languages, which wasn't my strong point. And then from there, people went on to study the traditional Jewish literature. I never got that far.
So were you were training in Jewish studies rather than training to be a rabbi?
Well, that is what being a rabbi is, in Jewish studies. And at the same time, I was helping at the synagogue in Lauderdale Road.
And so had you... I mean, it's quite interesting, because you hadn't... You don't sound as if you'd been strongly religious when you were younger. So what happened?
Well, I lost my faith.
No, but before you lost your faith, you know, from childhood, when you were in quite a mixed...
It was religious up to a point. It wasn't as religious as people in Gibraltar are today, because of the influx of foreign influence.
But what made you want to come to England and study?
Well, it was chance. I applied for a scholarship and I didn't get it. There was only two scholarships in those days. And then I was offered this. And I was interested in religion. In God. And I was worried about death. I'm not anymore.
How old were you then?
I was 17. 18.
And do you think that you know, what had happened to the Jews during the war had some bearing on this?
Yes, because when I was reading and understanding the prayers, because, you know, if you're Jewish and Orthodox, you read the prayers in Hebrew, you don't understand them. But I learned enough Hebrew to understand what I was reading. And what you were thanking God for had nothing to do and no relation to what actually happened in the real world. There's obviously no connection. I mean, you know, prayers are wishful thinking, not they don't relate to facts.
Did any of your family die during the war? Or Jewish, you know?
No.
And what about Israel? I mean, were you aware of Israel? I mean, you were...
Oh, yeah, very much so, yes.
And can you tell me a little bit about that?
What do you want me to tell you?
Well, I just wondered about whether, you know, obviously Israel was a very new state at this point. And how much people knew about it? Did people want to go and visit? You know, what was the feeling about Israel? Was it an excitement?
Well, it was encouraging that Israel. I remember the uncle of my first cousin. I mean, in other words, it was a brother who had been a major in the army in the Middle East, and before Israel was declared a state, and you know, we knew all the Arab countries were going to pounce on it. He said, no chance. I mean, I've commanded Egyptian soldiers, and they're going to be beaten thunder, which they were. My first contact with Zionists was when I went as a scout in 1947, there was an international jamboree at Moisson in France, and I met one prayer afternoon. I met some Zionists who sang all the songs and did all the things, but I didn't have much contact with Zionists as such. The synagogue I was attached with to in England was definitely non-Zionist. I felt that it was nice to have a Jewish state and proud that they did so well. But that's about it, really. It was a detached... I've never considered myself an Israeli, as compared to my younger brother, who settled and died in Israel. But then he did that for religious reasons. because he didn't want his children to be brought up in a milieu where they might meet somebody who wasn't Jewish and marry them.
Oh, I see. So, sorry, brought up in where? Where was he? In?
Well, he was brought up with me in Gibraltar.
Yes.
And then he went on to Tangier. And then he emigrated to Israel.
So he went from Tangier to Israel?
Well, to Gibraltar first and then Israel. He left Gibraltar in 1965.
That is interesting. So that, you know, you know, within your family, there were obviously some, you know, quite strong feelings about religion.
Well, some of, I have a brother who died very young because he was born with with only one kidney, and that was 40, so he died at the age of 21. But of the other four of us, two became very religious, and two of us are complete atheists.
And how did you get on?
Very well, as a family.
So they did, you know, I mean, did you argue a lot about, you know...
No, we don't.
No.
No, we accept each other's point of view, we respect each other. But where you have affection and love, I mean, you don't worry about the other thing. It's a personal matter.
Well, that's the right way to behave, isn't it?
Yeah,
definitely. Absolutely. So you were in London at the college, and then you lost your faith.
Yeah.
So what happens next?
Well, I didn't know what to do, and I came back to England, and I wasn't very good at finding a job. And I ended up as working in Lyons Bakery in Cadby Hall, Olympia. And then I decided to do my military service back in Gibraltar, and I had booked my return ticket. And so for 3 weeks, I'd given up my job. I had free evenings. So I went to a dance hall called the Astoria in Charing Cross Road and met a girl. And I fell in love with her, and I said I would come back and marry her, which I did. Much to my everlasting regret. But
I won't go into that. But when you did your national service, did you do it in Gibraltar?
Yes. It was known as the Gibraltar Defence Force. It is now the Royal Gibraltar Regiment.
I know this sounds naive, because I don't know about this, but I'll ask you anyway. I mean, was it all done? There doesn't seem to be an awful lot of space in Gibraltar. I mean, a whole lot of young men. Where did you all stay? I mean, and what did you do?
Well, we had barracks. I mean, but in those days, three-quarters of Gibraltar was in the hands of the army. So the army had plenty of room. The Gibraltarians didn't.
And everybody had to do national service?
Yes.
And did that carry on like it did in England till...
That's right. I did my national service. I went back in 1952.
And did you ever think about going into the armed forces at all?
Not really.
And do you think, I mean, what do you think the relationship was between, you know, we've talked about British administration, but what about the actual, you know, military presence in Gibraltar and Gibraltar?
Well, I never had personally any problems. I mean, I had friends in the army. In fact, I remember when I came back in 1945, I was 15, and there was the Gibraltar Literary and Debating Society, which had been started under the auspices of Mason Macfarlane when he was governor, which was an army thing, and I had older friends of mine who were going there, and I started going and mixing with the more intellectual national service types of those days. But they wouldn't take me as a member because I was too young. But I was still used to go to the meetings and so on. So, you know, I had, to me, I've never had any anti-British feelings. In fact, much of my early life was coloured by the picture of English life I got from comics.
Which ones?
Oh, Tiger Tims. Particularly, I mean, you know, sort of highlighted muffins and Christmas celebrations and Guy Fawkes and that sort of thing. And that became part of my culture.
That's really interesting, because so many people who come from different countries, warm countries within what was the British Empire, say such similar things. You know, I remember talking to a man from St. Lucia who kept saying he talked about muffins and rock cakes and, you know...
Yeah, but this is the thing you read about in comics. And
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Actually, just going back to the British again, I mean, what about when we talk about the governor? I mean, was that... Where was government? Was government housed in a Catholic convent or something?
Well, yes, it was a Catholic convent until 1712. Now, it was a convent in the Spanish sense. A convent in Spain is a religious institution, whether of monks or nuns, within a town. A monastery is something outside the town. So this was a Franciscan convent of Franciscan friars. And what happened was... that's my wife coming back. What happened was that when the British took Gibraltar, the Spaniards started a blockade and started bombarding, so they destroyed the top part, the northern part of the town, the convent in the south. So when the Guards regiment arrived in December 1704, this became the mess for the junior officers of the Guards. In July 1705, the Guards left for Barcelona and they were replaced by Colonel Elliot's regiment. And this is not Elliot of the Siege, it was a great uncle of his by marriage. And this Elliot quartered his officers there. And then he stayed there and he virtually pushed the friars to one corner of the thing. His successor, Stanix, moved the friars out completely and kept it as government house. So it's been government house in 1712.
So when it was the governor, when it was, you know, the governor was always present, obviously, when you were living and growing up in Gibraltar, was there a sort of aspiration to be invited to government house?
Oh, yes, there was very much there.
And who did get invited?
Well, leading members of society. My father never got into that. My uncle, who was a lawyer, was. And that aspiration continues to this day. I mean, my wife will go to Gibraltar every June because the society runs a visit to Gibraltar every June, which includes being invited to the Queen's birthday garden party.